Okay, well, thank you. Kids can be dismissed to Noah's Ark Clubhouse. And we have kind of two special guests actually leading the time this morning, so that should be fun back there. I understand the kids did a great job last week reciting their verses up here, yeah? Did that make you guys want to jump up on stage and share your verses that you had memorized? Yeah? Yeah? No? Oh, okay. I just wondered. Yeah. Honestly, that program, we started that back there at Stonebrook also. And the church where the whole, I'll call it a program, started had that effect upon the adults. When they saw their kids memorizing 100 verses, 200 verses, they thought, you know what? That's embarrassing. And so it has had an effect on the adult community. So I'm really glad the kids did that last week. Well, we're going to do something a little bit different today. And Tim just told me that he's not setting the timer yet. I had all this packaged into 15 minutes because that was going to be our limit. But he's not starting the timer yet. So I can talk now for minutes and it doesn't even count. Oh, man. Now, Rex also told me that that thing is fast. So you have to set it at 17 in order to be right. Yeah. Now we want to do something a little different here this morning. It relates a little bit, you know, financial peace, according to Bob and Tim, and we titled it that because maybe a lot of you have heard of Dave Ramsey. He's had this seminar called the Financial Peace University, series of seminars helping believers in particular, but all people, but especially believers, because we can think in terms of a good basis for life, and we can make adjustments. It makes sense to a believer's life. Well, he has this Financial Peace University thing where he instructs people how to make wise decisions relative to money and to arrive at a position where you are stable. We wanted to bring this up in this community. Just candidly, we wanted to say, you know, we're a young church. This isn't all that surprising. But we're at an unsustainable pace. That is, our offering does not equal what we pay out. That's why we start church plants with a startup fund. So this isn't all that unusual. But we thought we wanted to address this subject of giving. And anytime you do that, you can be labeled as greedy or anything like that. We thought, we're not going to do that. What we want to do is share with you our lives. We just want to share with you how we see giving and how we arrived at this heart, this mindset towards giving. I think it'll be helpful for you as well and encouraging. So before I begin, am I started now? You already had it going. Okay, all right, I'm fine. I just want to start with an illustration, okay? What would you think, or how would your attitude change if somebody told you, I will pay you $10,000 a minute to do the dishes? What? Where do you sign up? Exactly. And I asked somebody in my household this question, and she said, well, there might be some elbows at the sink, you know? Let me in there. Why? Why is that? We relate to this. Why is that? Since Adam took the fruit, we have been insecure. And we're grasping at straws and grasping at idols and grasping for money, anything, to give us a sense of security. And somebody shared it already here, I think, this morning. God's in the process of saying, no. I am He. I am the one, the only one that you may trust securely. I'm the only, it's Grace. She shared some verses with me from Psalm 46, I think. He's the only one that we may trust. And what He is doing in our lives is moving us along till we are confident in Him. So, I wanted to offer that because we relate to it, don't we? But you know, this has actually been proven, and I'm not surprised, But a great majority of those who win the lottery regret it. Most of them end up regretting it. Most of them do. Most of them say, I wish I had never done it. Why? Because it wasn't what they thought it would be. It did not turn out to be the security that they thought it was going to bring them. And instead, they shot the wad and are left with nothing but their own pain of having invested in something that didn't satisfy. We got something better, and I want to relate where my thoughts over the years have gone in this area. I want to start with a motivation of reward. First verse on your page there is Hebrews 11:6. He who comes to God must believe a couple of things. First, you must believe he exists, and secondly, you must believe that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Why do you have to believe that? Because that's the way he is. You cannot know him other than the way he really is. You don't know him if you don't know him as a rewarder, because that's who he is. He is a giver. David said, your loving kindness extends to the heavens. He is a rewarder. This has blessed me to know our God is a rewarder. Next verse, Matthew 10:42. Whoever in the name of a disciple gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. Jesus told this, obviously, to relate to the size of our giving. Just a cup of water. Notice, though, it's in the name of a disciple. And I want rewards. I'm up for that. I'm made for this. So I wanted to know how to do this. Notice it's in the name of a disciple. What this means to me, go back to that that sink analogy. In our household, we when we have supper, we really don't have a schedule of who's going to do the dishes, but somebody does. You know, after supper, somebody just goes in there and starts doing the dishes. But after the dishes are done, the girls get a little bit lazy. And between meals, you know, oh, here's a cup, and I just sort of lay it in the sink. Or maybe they had a snack, a bowl of cereal or something, and then just sort of gets set in the sink. So I've come to the sink many times, and honestly, this is how I think. God, here are your dishes. And you're watching me, and I just want to cover over the sins of my sisters here, the laziness of my sisters. I'm just going to, they don't want to get their hands wet. I don't want to get my hands wet either, but honestly, if it's for you, it's not too small a thing, and so I clean up the sink. When I get to heaven, you're going to see it. Isn't that amazing? This inspires me. 2 Corinthians 4:17. Momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. Obviously, there's some comparisons going on here. Momentary with eternal. Light with weighty. And affliction with glory. We sing that song, though there's pain in the offering. We're talking about giving here as maybe a little affliction, okay? But the glory is incomparable. That $10,000 a minute thing that I mentioned, you thought was a little bit large. Mm-mm. There's no way to compare it. This is beyond all comparison. That is the kind of reward that our deeds as a disciple are gifts, are giving. We're talking primarily about monetary giving here, but it could be related to anything, will be unimaginably rewarded. And Matthew 6:4-5, when you give alms, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing, that your alms may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will repay you. We can't always give without somebody knowing. You know, you write a check and your name is on it, they know you gave it. The issue isn't so much that you must give without anybody knowing. I just brought this up because I wanted us to think about this. God sees. He knows the heart. And this has been one of the things that has prepared my heart relative to giving. There's reward. That's not stupid. What's his name? Jim Elliot said he's no fool who gives what he can't keep to gain what he can't lose. It relates to money as well as your whole life. Next area of motivation for me has been responsive. 1 John 3:16-17. We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us. And we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has the world's goods and beholds his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? This verse relates to me what I experienced the night I got saved. I forgot how many years ago, almost 40 years ago, be 40 this fall, September. You could have offered me the world and I would have despised it. I didn't want anything. I wanted salvation. I wanted to go to heaven. I wanted to escape hell. And this verse embodies this. Because he gave his life for me, I said, Lord, I want you to have me completely. I want you to have everything. Take over. Take control. That's what's being described here. A responsive nature. A responsiveness to what he's given to me. Do you know that all of the very, very, very much of the Old Testament law is about ceremonies. And most of the ceremonies are about responding to God taking Israel out of Egypt and bringing them into the promised land. He has them remember, because he wants them to respond. Respond. If you forget the reason that you do these things, it's a burden. What Tim and I are sharing with you is why giving is not a burden to us. There's been pain in the offering. It's been hard sometimes. But when I recognize these things, it all opens up to me, and I am free to give. And the last area I have down is the area to revere. So reward, response, revere. Leviticus 19:14. You shall not curse a deaf man, nor place a stumbling block before the blind. I mean, why would you want to? But you shall revere the Lord your revere your God. I am the Lord. In other words, again, the thought is that I can show my honor to God by how I respond in secret. A deaf man can't hear you curse him. A blind man can't see you move a little stumbling block in his path so you can laugh at him. But God sees, and God says, your heart of reverence is displayed in your actions towards those who are somehow handicapped. Let's take it a little bit farther here in Deuteronomy 15. If there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns, in your land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart, nor close your hand from your poor brother. But you shall freely open your hands to him and shall be generous and shall generously lend him sufficient for his need in whatever he lacks. Beware, lest there is a base thought in your heart saying, the seventh year, the year of remission is near. In the Jewish community, every 7 years, they were to release anybody who was in debt to them. And maybe this was 6 years and 11 months, and you think, oh man, they might not have time to pay me back. God says, that's a base thought. You shall not think about that. And your eye be hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing. Then he may cry out to the Lord against you, and it'll be a sin in you. You shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work. So there's some reward in this as well. And in all your undertakings. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land. It was this kind of thing that I began to see about 20 years ago in going through the Old Testament over and over. I was amazed at how God evaluated the health of the Jewish community in their souls by how they dealt with the poor, the orphan, the widow, the fatherless, anybody who was needy. If they were restrictive towards those, God would call them sick. If they were generous towards them, God would call them of a right heart. And I started to give to the poor. And you know, there are dozens of agencies of the poor. And I don't know how many we've contributed to, quite a few, because they're my fellow human beings. It was just, sometimes, you know, I look through the agencies, try to find out for sure that it's going to go to somebody in need and so forth. But many of them do. And so just to display the heart of my God, just to revere him, I began giving. And I don't know how much we've given, but quite a bit. And that's just relative to my fellow man and in reverence to God. But relative to the community of believers, you know that verse in 1 John there that we talked about? I was meditating on that verse one day, and God just brought it to mind. I was selling a car to a brother. And I thought, you know, he's needy, and I have this car. So I just gave it to him. Said, you don't need to pay me anymore. It's yours. That's what that meant to me. I have it. He needs it. Okay. I wanted the love of God to abide in me. That's what it meant to me. By the way, several years later, when our kids were to driving age, a brother drove a car in our driveway and said, it's yours. Really nice car. And it got driven. So that's another point. God does repay. But then there was one other issue with our church family back there in Ames at Stonebrook. That is that we didn't have a building. Hey, we don't have a building. And we did these fundraisers 3 times. We did fundraisers, once for the land, once for the first building, and then for the addition. And I remember those meetings. We were supposed to write down a pledge. And I thought, I do the budget. We don't have anything. We can't give. And somehow we gave. Somehow we made a pledge, and we fulfilled that pledge. It was amazing. And then was the building. And I thought, well, that went so well, I'll make a bigger pledge. And to be honest, I wasn't able to fulfill it. Didn't make it. I mean, it was outlandish, and it didn't make it. And you don't know sometimes. You just do the best you can in these matters. But I think that our family, I don't have the figures. I think we gave about $20,000 over 12 or 15 years as a whole family. Kids had paper routes, and I suggested to them that they might contribute also. And they did. All of them did. It was fun. Over those 12 or 15 years, at least 3 times, we received a $1,000 check in the mail. Totally unexpected. I have hundreds of items written down. I didn't bring my list this morning. Hundreds of items written down of how God restored to us some of what we gave. But that's beside the point. The point that I'm trying to share with you this morning is how our hearts, and Tim and I are going to share how our hearts have developed towards our attitude in giving. It's God's anyway. We're only giving back. We've tithed all our married days. We've tithed. Before that, I think we gave more than a tithe. Because it's all God's. We sang it this morning. Every perfect gift, giver of every perfect gift, it comes from him. So I'm just acknowledging that by giving something back to him. So I'm sharing with you kind of how these thoughts have developed in my situation, my heart.
All right. Thank you, Bob. That was good. That was good. And guys, we just wanted to share these things with you because, we were motivated to share these things with you because of the financial condition of our little fellowship here, where our expenses are greater than our income. But really, it's a delight for Bob and I to just share with you what God has done in our lives and how he has impressed his truth, his word, his will into our lives, and how that has borne good fruit in our lives and in our families. And that's the greater joy for me is just to be able to share with you some cool God stories, some examples of how God's word comes to life in a life. I want to start by running through a bunch of verses. I'm just going to read through these verses because whenever somebody talks to me about money, whenever even somebody says the word money, these are the verses that go through my mind, kind of like the ending credits of a movie. You know, somebody starts going money, and I start thinking these verses, you know, and these things God has imprinted on my life. Let's just go through them. Matthew 6:33, it starts with this one. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these will be given to you as well. And he's talking about clothes and food. So it'll all be taken care of, but you got to keep seek first. Luke 16, 1 through 15, the whole section, but I've just pulled out verses 10 through 13a. It says, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Next verse. Proverbs 11, 24 to 29, but this is verse 25. A generous man, a generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. Next one. Proverbs 22, 9. The generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor. And the next one, Proverbs 22, 7. Debt, it's on debt. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. And we got a couple more, I think. Proverbs 14, 23. All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. And our last verse, the example of the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 15, 10, he says, I worked harder than all of them, the Pauline work ethic. There was a verse that I have added into there since I gave Kristen those verses, and that is Proverbs 15, 22. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. Excuse me. Okay, there's the verses. Here's the story. A while back, I came across an article that really articulated the way I think, the way I view the world. It was very powerful for me to read this article because it was about the prevailing mentality that Americans had during World War II. It started off saying this. Don't you know there's a war on? That scolding phrase rang throughout the years of World War II. It reprimanded those who wasted anything, bawled out those who fudged on doing their part for the war effort. It finger-pointed those on the home front who failed to sacrifice in the fight against the Axis. But the dreaded phrase didn't get leveled very often. That's because the word sacrifice meant something back then. A part of everyday life in this country from 1941 to 1945. People who lived here during World War II remember a time when sacrifice was an American priority. And then the article went on to detail examples of how that played out. For me, the scriptures are very clear that there's a spiritual war going on. Right here, right now, we're in the midst of a spiritual war, and that sacrifice ought to be a Christian priority. It's the way I think. It's the worldview that I have. It's what drives my convictions and my motivation for my life is realizing there's a spiritual war going on. It's real and I'm in it. And I have a responsibility to fund the war effort. Jesus said, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. He set the priority. That's the priority for my life. It's to seek first his kingdom in this world. Peter, he said, if you suffer as a Christian, do not be ashamed, but praise God that you bear that name. Suffering, sacrifice, it's a part of the Christian life. Paul, he said, endure hardship with us like a good soldier. And then he goes on and he says, and by the way, follow my example as I follow Christ. Endure hardship. It's just a part of what it looks like to be a Christian. this view of the Christian life that I have, it has come to me part because of God's gifts, the gifting in my life. I got the gift of an evangelist. I see the world through that lens. Part of it is motivated from that, but part of it is because as a young believer growing up, that's what I saw. The fellowship of believers that I was with, they lived this way. They understood there was a war going on, and they were engaged in it, and so I was imprinted by their example. So I just wanted to make that clear, because when I talk about financial peace, most people don't find it very peaceful. Okay, I'm just saying. They don't. But it's just because I am convinced that if I seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, God will take care of the rest. And He has. And I've got a litany of stories to prove it. You know, I really see that it is an evidence of God's blessing in my life that I have the awesome wife that I have, the great family that I got, a house that's better than I deserve, you know, a business and all the fun stuff of life. I have that. I'm convinced because God has honored His promises and His principles that I have taken hold of in my life. I'm convinced of it. So let me get on to some. First and foremost, when it comes to sound biblical financial principles, the one that permeates my being the most, the place where I start, which is actually the place where most financial gurus end, including Dave Ramsey, this is where he ends, it's where I begin. I begin with generous, sacrificial giving. That's where I start. I mean, I think, wow, guys, don't you know there's a war on? How would you not start with generous, sacrificial giving? Throughout my college years, I was the recipient of generous, sacrificial giving. The other believers, they just realized I didn't have the money to go to a retreat or an LT or go on a missions trip or even to the geology field camp. I remember getting several hundred dollars from a brother so I could go to that field camp for the summer. And that's what I saw people doing, motivated me to do the same. I remember when I was on going to staff training, I'm officially employed by a missions organization called Great Commission Ministries, and so I'm technically a domestic missionary. When I was going through training, they told us the best people to ask for money, you know, for support, the best people are missionaries. He said, because they understand the value of giving. And I have found that to be very true, without question. The reality that my livelihood has been carried on the generous gifts of God's people has shaped my life since 1990 and to this very day. And so, Kristen, God bless her, married me anyway, knowing this. And I'll admit, our financial situation when we first got married was quite precarious. Our income was very fluctuating. We were often short-checked. Short-checked means, you know, we have an amount that we have been designated to receive from GCM. But I only get it if the money's there. So if people forget to give, or if I haven't raised enough money or something, then we only get what is in there. And so, you know, if I'm supposed to get $2,000, but I only have $1,500 in there, I only get $1,500. So I'm short-checked. It happens quite a bit. And so we were getting short-checked quite a bit. And there would be so many times during those first several years that we would be out of money and out of food, and we still had month left to live, you know? And it was like one of those scary situations where you start to panic. But Every time, God came through just bizarre things. Usually, it was because of the fairy egg mother. That's how she came to be known by us. This lady in the church just would randomly, in her mind, but for us, it was targeted, When we were at a point of greatest need, boom, there would be a bag of groceries, usually eggs, sitting at the doorstep. Yeah, we got to enjoy eggs. And so we called her the Fairy Egg Mother, and she took care of us during a lot of very lean years. And God bless her, I know He will. But you know, no matter how tight things got for Kristen and I, our priority was to seek first His kingdom. And so when you look at our ledger, our budget, it had as our first line of expense was to tithe, which means 10%, was to give 10% to the church. That was the first line. It was, okay, this is how much our check stub said we were supposed to get, you know, and then it's tithe, then it's taxes, and then we get to live off of whatever is left over. My take home was after I tithed. That's what I budgeted. Because there's a war going on. How could I not? My goodness, I couldn't even imagine thinking some other way. So when people struggle with tithing, I understand that the problem is they don't really believe there's a war going on. They think the money is just theirs to have fun with. I see the money is there to invest into the kingdom. And so, to this day, tithe comes first. It's our first line item. And God's blessed it. And as God has blessed us and our financial picture became more stable, I gave away more. I enjoy doing it. It drives Kristen crazy. I have a fun time. I just give away more. We typically give somewhere between 15% and 25% away. Our core income this past year, we gave away 25%. Yes, that's why all those budgets are in the red. I'm sorry. I did the math. So last year, we gave away 25%. And I have fun doing it, and Kristen's just like, oh. So it's because there's a war going on. And that idea that you can't outgive God, well, I'm trying. And it drives Kristen crazy. But God has been gracious. Because our church here has been giving a significant amount of our church budget as support to GCM on my behalf. And that's going to get cut in July, barring a miracle. When that happens, our income will be cut in about a half, as I figure it. What am I going to do about that? Tithe is going to come first. My mentality is, I'm going to suffer a whole lot more and a whole lot longer than I'm going to make the missionaries suffer, than I'm going to make this church suffer. I'm suffering first. And that's just the way it's going to be. Sorry, honey. I'm thinking about what we need to sell. We're going to have some major garage sales. But that's just the way it works, because there's a war going on, okay? That's just the way I think. All right. Another biblical financial principle that I operate off of is a hostile attitude towards debt. Hostile attitude towards debt. When Chris and I got married, we had a combined student loan debt of about $20,000, okay? And then there's credit cards. Credit cards became a necessary evil when you were in a situation where something broke, car breaks, you know, things like that, and some way you needed to get that repaired. Or sometimes there's things that will only accept a credit card. So credit card debt began to build. But I remember 1999. That's right. I remember 1999. But not because of the old TV show. But I remember that year because that was 1 year after Wayne was born. And we were facing a mountain of medical debt. Okay? And also, we had just purchased our first house by some miraculous set of means. We had just purchased our first house, and the church had just launched its first capital funds campaign. At least it was somewhere in there, as best I could figure it. So we had all this stuff going on. I was at that time making about $2,664 a month, pretty much exactly. At least if that money came in, then that's what we got. So $2,664 a month, that's what I got. So money was tight. I mean, real tight. I remember a garage sale. I remember staying up all night because we left the garage sale stuff out there. Remember that night? And I watched my stuff because we were close enough to campus to be dangerous. And yeah, somebody did steal one of our things. Dog, I couldn't believe that. But anyway, so we were selling our stuff, and so money was really tight. But what bothered me the most was that I was not able to give as much as I wanted to. It really bothered me. I couldn't give as much away. So Kristen and I went on a DWAD. That's right, a DWAD. Yeah, all right. DWAD. It's D-W-O-D. Declare war on debt. That's what we did. We declared war on debt. I made posters in our office, you know. I'm sure we reminded each other, you know, don't you know there's a war going on or something like that, you know. We remind each other that we're on a DWAD. What else did we do? Our tax refund all went to the DWAD. We just did everything we could to get rid of debt. And within, as best I can figure, within 2 years, we were able to eliminate our debt, which freed up so much resources. We were able to sell our house and move into a bigger house because we had more kids coming. The kids just kept coming. And so we were then able to move to a different situation, and that was really cool. And it was just that time, 1999, for me, is a powerful demonstration of God's faithfulness to his promises. And you know, in today's credit-driven society, the war's still going on. We're still fighting the battle, the war on debt. It's still happening because we now have more medical bills coming in, some more with Wayne, some with me. It's like, So we're still fighting that fight. You can't ever let your guard down, you know, right? It's kind of like a Cold War. I'll make one caveat, though, on debt. Some debt can be good. I discovered, through the counsel of others, actually, that debt through home ownership can be a far better situation than having to pay out a rent every month. Because here, I'm paying a monthly, you know, allotment, and I'm investing it into something I own, into some capital real estate. Whereas if I'm renting, I'm giving it to somebody else, and they're lining their pockets with it. And so I found that owning a home, actually I found buying a fixer-upper, fixing it up and then selling it, is really good. It actually works out well in the end. And so mortgage debt can be a really good thing as long as you can pay your mortgage. Okay? Another type of debt that I found that I personally think is acceptable is investment debt into the kingdom. What I mean by that is manageable debt accrued as a result of a kingdom-building effort, such as going on a mission trip, meeting a crisis, living in the dorms instead of moving off campus. I see as investments into the kingdom. Yes, you may end up accruing some debt as a result, but there's a war going on, and that's so I just think that's just it just will happen. It's there's a word I'm looking for. It's you can't navigate around that. Inescapable. That you're going to have to, if you're engaged in the war effort, accrue some debt, but I will say manageable debt. So that's that one, declaring war on debt. I think the next one, I'm looking at what I did here. Yes. All right. The next one is to humbly receive help and to get counsel on the financial stuff in my life. Wow, I'm amazed at how sensitive I can be and how sensitive others are when it comes to, like, money. You know? You're probably feeling it. And I found that if I just stop that, humble myself and let people speak into my life on these things, things went better. I think it's one of the biggest financial blessings of my life. It was by listening. I've written down stories of things that God's done in my life that I just like, wow, God, thanks. You're awesome. And so this is from my prayer journal. And this is what it says. It's amazing how God has provided for me. Time and again, I'm swamped with responsibilities and needs and don't have time to get it all done when God shows up and meets my needs. A couple are Terry Ashley noticing and then walking me through refinancing my home loan, which will save me multiple thousands of dollars. Then, while having a date night, someone paid for our meal without our knowledge of it. Also, Ev has volunteered to not only take my cars in for oil changes whenever they need them, but will even pay for it. God has supplied all my needs in Christ Jesus. So that was just one entry where just like so many things are happening at once. It's like, okay, it's God that is honoring and he's being faithful to his promises and his principles. I think humbly receiving help from others is one of the best things you can do for your financial picture in your life. It's one of the best things you can do. And this means even the hard counsel that you don't like. As much as the counsel is like, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. You know, no, it's the hard stuff. I remember a brother counseling me to buy a car that was on red title. Red title means it's salvaged, which means that it's non-roadworthy. And he said, well, dude, you know, this is what you should buy. Well, I didn't want to buy a car on red title. In fact, I didn't even like the car. It didn't look cool. But I bought it anyway. Turned out to be the best car we've ever had. We ended up calling her Wrinkles. Yeah. There's a reason why we called it Wrinkles. It had been totaled. It was all wrinkled. But it was a great working car. My goodness, my attitude towards Toyota Tercel changed after that. And it was great. And that's where I learned, even following hard counsel that I don't like, God honors that. And he blesses it. Last thing I want to mention is that hard work is a blessed necessity of life. A blessed necessity. Hard work. I mean, you know, when you grow up on a farm, you can't help but be inundated by hard work. You know, you don't have the option of saying, I don't want to. Well, I guess you had the option. It wouldn't be pleasant. Consequences wouldn't be good. So I learned growing up to not be afraid of hard work. Okay, so long, difficult hours on the farm built into me a willingness to be uncomfortable for long periods of time for the greater good. The greater good was not getting a whooping. You know, that's just where a kid's mind is, you know. I don't realize that there was a direct benefit to the food I ate at the table. That I realized later. But I was motivated by the not getting a whooping. So anyway, there was a greater good. You worked long, hard hours. It was all right. And so this work ethic that was built into me went to the next level when I realized that the greater good was advancing the kingdom. The kingdom of God on earth. Whoa, if I was going to work hard to avoid a whooping, how much harder will I work to advance God's kingdom, to bring salvation to people's lives? Oh, yeah. You better believe it. So when it came time to support raising, remember, I'm a missionary. So when it came time to support raising, most people, it takes them a year to a year and a half, 2 years. I got it done in 3/4 of a year. That's because I worked hard on it. Ministry, once I got released to ministry, I just took this hard work ethic right into that. So going to leadership training programs, taking on intimidating projects like a food booth at Visha or all the crazy stuff that I have us do here, you know, it just flows out. You know, going on overseas mission trips. I was one of the first guys that left our church to go on a mission trip down to Honduras. And it was scary, but it was a no-brainer. Working long, hard hours is a no-brainer, especially when it's for the kingdom. And I've carried that into the store that we now own, the Game Exchange. You know, I receive no income from the work I do there. And it's stressful to own a business. I mean, somebody should have clued me in. By the way, Tim, it's not going to be easy. And so there's lots of long, hard, difficult hours, but I work hard anyway. One, it's just because it's a part of the ethic that's built into me, but also just because of the joy of meeting people and influencing people for Christ there at the store. And it's such a great joy that I'm willing to do it. And it's a joy for me to provide an income for my kids and a few other precious souls like Josh Mann. So, you know, I'll work hard, they get the money. I'm fine with that because I'm working for the kingdom. I'm building a kingdom here. That's what my life is about. I wanted to mention that, you know, because that mentality, I just thought I'd want to mention that when the scriptures say all hard work brings a profit, that profit isn't always in material possessions like money. I found that it oftentimes is, but not always. I just realized that there is a profit to be had from hard work that you won't find in the bank account. And this is what I've really found a great blessing from. It's the profit of knowing you've accomplished something with your life. You know, you've made a difference. That's a profit to me, to know that. It increases my ambition to take on bigger, bolder projects. You know, wow. You know, because I've done this, how about doing this? And I start dreaming bigger dreams and believing God for greater things because I was able to pull off this one. And so working hard helps you to become more ambitious. You learn a ton about things, about life, because you've got experience of trying, sometimes failing, but trying nonetheless. And so you learn a ton about things. And you know, I think one of the coolest things is you get more fun out of life when you work hard. I knew that would throw some of you. But you do. When you put in a long, hard day, and then you go home and you are able to watch a movie with popcorn and pop, it is so much more richer than if you've been messing around doing nothing all day. Then it's like, big deal. You know, I've done this already. I've already watched a movie today. Oh my goodness, when you work a long, hard week, the weekend is rich. It's awesome. So you actually do get more fun out of life when you work hard. And for me, just the joy of knowing that I'm living according to God's will brings me a deep satisfaction that no one can take away. And so those are just the how these biblical principles have played out in my life. Being a generous, sacrificial giver, that's where it starts for me. And then, what were the other two? You guys, hopefully you remember. A hostile attitude towards debt, humbly receiving help and counsel from others, and then just working hard is a blessed necessity of life. It's just the way I roll. And so those were the principles that have backed that up. Okay? That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. How about I pray for you guys, and I think Bob's going to come up here and help us remember the Lord in communion. Okay, Lord, this is it. This is our one shot at life. Here we go. It's our time at the plate. Oh, God, how I pray we would swing hard. And I pray, God, we would swing smart by living out your principles in our lives, however you might impress them and mold them and shape them in our lives. I pray we would obey. We would trust you and obey. God, especially when it comes to the financial realm. It's so hard. Even you, Jesus, laid it on the line, said you can only have one master. You can't have two. You're going to either love money or you're going to love God, but you can't love both. And it's like, really? Is it that cut and dry? Well, you said it is. Well, then I'm going to choose God. I'm going to choose to love God. And I'm going to love you, and I'm going to honor you and obey your biblical principles until my dying day. And I want to ask you, God, to help build into each and every one of us solid core convictions that when you build your house on the rock, it stands. It might be scary. In fact, it will be. People might criticize you. They will. You build your house on the rock anyway. Because you're faithful. You're reliable. You're dependable. And so I thank you, God, for that. And I ask you to bless every single person in this room with these things in Jesus' name. Amen.